Blog Talk Radio.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
The Eagles are headed to the Super Bowl.
Wednesday, 11-2014. Welcome to the Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko. Welcome back, partner.
Great to be back, Bill, and even though the Phillies haven't exactly been setting the world on fire, there's plenty to talk about concerning their situation, as well as the other pro sports teams here, so let's give it a shot tonight.
And we're going to cover them all. We're hitting all the bases tonight. Phillies, Flyers, Eagles, and 76ers. We have another great guest with us tonight who also was with us on our first ever Philly Press Box Radio Friday night keg party, Mr. Kyle Lutz.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back, Kyle.
Thank you.
Okay, before we get started, I'd like to thank our listeners for the great support of last week's program with Matt Goldberg, co-author of the book Snowball's Chance, Philly Fires Back Against the National Media. That show was very well listened to and can still be listened to and heard on the podcast at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. Jen, I have finished the book since last week. It really is a great read for any Philly fan, sports fan, and a great Father's Day present.
Yeah, I dropped that hint to my wife. Maybe she'll get it for me. We'll see. We had a great time with Matt, who had plenty to offer for our listeners. He was really a fun guy to talk to.
Yes, he was. And it's the book is still available. You can go on Amazon and get it. Tell your wife that. And also she can contact Matt directly at on Matt Goldberg's Facebook page. And drop him a line, and he will send you a personalized copy as well. So it is available, and like I say, it was a really, really good read. So many good stories of events that have happened in Philadelphia over the years that we remember them all, and they all kind of run together. But when you start reading them, you're like, man, I remember that, or I was even at that game. It's a really, really good read. All right, well, we have the Shop for Kisses phone lines open tonight again at 929-55, so feel free to call throughout the show. We do ask that all language be professional. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Also, for the first time, if you would like to comment but not call the show, go to Philly Press Box on Facebook, Facebook page, and send a personal message. And we'll try our best to get it on. We'll try that for the first time tonight, and hopefully it'll work out. Something new for us. Okay, let's start out with the Phillies. You guys ready to go?
Yep.
Ready.
Okay. The Phillies are 26-36, men, at this point. 62 games in. They're 7.5 games out in the Eastern Division. They're tied for the worst winning percentage of 0.419 with the Cubs. Is it time to sell?
Yeah, I think so.
If so, who goes? What do you think, Chet?
Oh, man, we're going to talk a lot about who's going to maybe be traded off before July 31st, but the most amazing thing to me right now is that the Phillies haven't won two games in a row in 3 weeks. That's hard to believe. I mean, they still have a pretty decent lineup. I mean, yeah, they're not hitting all that well with runners in scoring position. The pitching's been inconsistent, but you'd think they'd be doing better than they are. They're also only 7.5 out, so it's not time to totally give up yet, but it's tough to be optimistic. As far as who's going to go, who's going to stay, they've got to consider everybody possible trade bait right now. And I'm talking Rollins, Utley, Cliff Lee, you know, once he's back, Rollins once he sets the Phillies' hit record. They got to listen to any and all offers in July because I don't think this team is a playoff contender, and I think Ruben Amaro and the guys above him have to realize that as well. So there are no more can't touch guys. Listen to all offers next month.
Okay. What's your thoughts, Kyle?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Chad. I mean, some guys I don't think they'll be moved for a couple of reasons. Howard, because of his contract. And, I mean, unless I can see him going to American League team as a DH, but the Phillies would have to eat up a significant portion of the of the contract in order for that to happen. But I definitely can see a lot of the guys going. And Ali, you know, he's kind of the same thing, but also more so because of his physical problems, because of his knees. I don't see a team picking him up, but you never know. Never say never. But I see more so guys like Lee and Rollins going. I think Papelbon might stay. He's kind of one of the guys that could stay or go, whereas Howard and Utley I see staying, and guys like Lee and a couple other guys I could see going. So more so the older guys with the bigger contracts that, you know, Lee wants to win a championship. So Lee's probably the biggest thing right now. It's more so his health and, you know, whether or not he can get back healthy. He's going to start back throwing again. So that'll pique some teams' interest. So it's kind of a couple of them maybe can stay, a couple of them maybe or go. But it's kind of up in the air at this point.
You mentioned Papelbon, and that's an interesting name. I mean, he's been really one of the bright spots of the season so far for the Phillies, other than that opening week time that he got knocked around and blew this first save opportunity. He's been excellent, and if he can keep that up, I mean, there's going to be a contending team that's going to be in need of a solid closer. So if Papelbon is still pitching like he has been in July, I think some teams will definitely be interested in talking to Ruben Amaro about Jonathan Papelbon's availability. So I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if he continued to pitch like this, if he were dealt or at least talked about being dealt.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at that either.
I think he's got to be on the top of the list.
Yep.
I guess
the biggest concern I have with this, whether they blow it up or not, I mean, if you just talk about the guys that you guys just mentioned, you know, you start with Papelbon and say you go to Cliff Lee, and then Jimmy Rollins as a possibility as a late season addition. I don't think they're moving Utley. They wouldn't have signed him to that big contract. They're not going to move Howard because they can't probably if they did want to. But I guess what's really troubling to me is I was looking up some numbers with Lehigh Valley, and it's scary down there. You know, you've got Tyson Gillies, who's supposed to be an up-and-comer. He's hit .217. Mikel Franco is the next best thing. He's hitting .213. Cameron Ruff, who actually had some big league time last year, is hitting .170. You know, there's not a lot down on the farm. The leading hitters on that team, Ronnie Cedeno is already up. Reed Brignac was second. He's already up. Darren Ruff was hitting .265. He's been up. You know, there's just not a lot down there, and that's just the position players. It actually gets worse in the mouth.
Yeah, I mean, Jesse Biddle, who's at Reading, you know, was below .500 last year. Now this year he's 3-5. The ERA is not bad, 3.14, but I'd like to see more from Jesse Biddle as a future prospect to crack the rotation. He's still got a ways to go, I think, before he's going to be in Philadelphia. Speaking of prospects, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Kenny Giles now that he has joined the big club. He hasn't yet made his debut, but maybe that will happen tonight or tomorrow. 100-mile-an-hour Giles, whatever they call him. I want to see what he can do. I hope they don't overuse him right away, just give him, you know, some spot appearances here and there. But he's going to be fun to watch, and the crowd will certainly be into seeing what he can do and seeing if he can hit that 100 miles an hour at Citizens Bank Park.
As Jake Dickman did the other night.
He did, yeah.
Yeah. I guess, what you know, if you talk about the pitchers at Lehigh Valley, I mean, this is really pretty scary. But the Phillies all together already have used 21 pitchers in the big league roster, and we're not, you know, we're just in early, well, getting toward mid-June. But the guys, Garcia is probably their best pitcher down there. Luis Garcia, he's got 7 saves in 14 games with a 0 ERA. Came up to the big leagues for a couple appearances and got lit up. Cesar Jimenez, Ethan Martin, Sean Camp, Pettibone, Rosenberg, Buchanan, Lincoln, Omont, Horst, DeFreeze, they've all already been up, and they're not the answer. So, who, you know, if you cut loose a guy like a Papelbon or a Lee, what are you getting in return that has to be big league ready? I think you can't be getting a bunch of lower level guys because they don't have what it takes right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's scary. I mean, if you trade away a Cliff Lee, that means you're going to bring somebody else in and plug them into the rotation. They're probably not going to give you 7 or 8 innings tonight, and then you're going to put even more wear and tear on these young relievers. So that's definitely something to think about. I mean, you've talked in recent weeks about Jake Diekman being overused in the first month and a half or so of the season, Bill. You don't want to see these guys, you know, pitching 90 times during the course of the year. They're going to be worn out and burnt out. So they got to be careful if they do trade away a Cliff Lee to make sure they have somebody else to plug into the rotation.
The bullpen's just been suffering. You know, second worst ERA, you know, a couple of days ago, and they're right up there as far as one of the worst bullpens with Cincinnati. But the problem is, like you said, they're getting their reuse so much, it's not always their fault. I mean, it's not like back in the day where guys, you know, were pitching 300 or more innings. Now you're lucky if you get a guy that goes 220, 230 innings pitched a year because of pitch counts and all this other crap. So it's really taking a toll physically on the middle relievers.
One thing I did like was what the Phillies did with the draft over the past weekend. They really focused on the college guys instead of the high school guys. So theoretically, at least, they'll be ready sooner than high school players will. And that includes the number one pick, the number 7 overall draft pick, Aaron Nola, who on paper at least looks like a great pick. He was 11-1 at LSU. So, you know, hopefully we'll see him up in the Phillies uniform within a few years. I know it takes a while. He's going to need some seasoning. He'll be at Lakewood, I guess, to start. But, you know, hopefully they got it right this time and went for the more experienced guys who've played 3 or 4 years already in college. So we shall see. But, you know, on paper at least, it looks like they're doing something right as far as drafting future talent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I've said this from the beginning. I'm not real big on pushing guys through without giving them their time in AAA. But you know, they didn't waste any time with Giles. You know, he got in 11 games, but he wasn't down there long. He pitched pretty much every night, getting ready, and he had 5 saves in those 11 games. So you know, they brought him up. They brought up Holland. You know, he made the team out of spring training pretty much without any AAA experience. So, you know, they may try to rush these guys up and maybe get them through A-ball, get them to Double-A, and see where it goes from there. And in Jesse Biddle's case, as you mentioned, get him up to the big leagues here. You know, get him to Triple-A and get him to the big leagues pretty quickly.
Now, here's a question. Do you make Giles the setup man to Papelbon with Adams being out, or do you don't force him in that role right away?
I wouldn't put him in that role right away. I would just give him some spot appearances for the first couple of weeks, see how he does. And by the way, is anybody surprised that Mike Adams is back on the disabled list? I'm not.
No.
I'm not, and for the exact same reason. I think he was pitching him and Deacon were pitching every night. I'm not one bit surprised.
No.
Kyle, to answer your question, I believe that I would put the kid in the fire if he's this good, because who else are you going to put in there? You're going to go with Ethan Martin.
Ethan Martin's not that good. I would not even consider Martin.
Right.
I mean, Bastardo's been inconsistent his whole career. I mean, Diekman, I think, is the setup guy of the immediate future. But, you know, he's probably a little worn out already from all that use that he got in April and early May.
Yeah, I think Bastardo's more so like a lefty specialist at this point. I mean, I like him in that role, but like you said, outside of that, you know, he's not really going to be, you know, he's proven thus far that he can't really do much more than that. And, you know, Martin was pretty good in the minors, you know, although he only pitched 10 innings and had a 1.69 ERA, but he's one of those guys that could be pretty good in the minors when he gets in the majors. He's not quite ready, or he's just not. He's one of those guys that is in the minors for a reason. So, and you both make good points about Giles. you know, you can't go wrong either way, either putting him in the line of fire, setting up Papelbon, or like you said, Chad, getting him some work and then maybe doing that, easing his way in. If I were Morrow and Sandberg, you can't go wrong with either, because at this point you have nothing to lose, being 10 games under 500, and you're not, you know, like I think Chad, I think you mentioned it, you're not, you know, way far back, but you're not like two or three games, so why not?
I think his use will be based on how he performs. I mean, if he pitches great, lights out, you know, strikes out the side in his first appearance, they're not going to hesitate to use him a day or two later. But if he struggles a bit, they might give him a couple days off to think about it, or they might throw him right back in the fire. Who knows? But I think they're going to be very careful with him. I don't think they're going to rush him and overuse him right away, because you don't want to mess up this guy's psyche. He's a young guy, and if he does get lit up a couple of times, you know, that's going to weigh on him. So hopefully they'll be careful with him.
Yeah,
and one final note on him, you know, when he was in Double A, he was striking out about a batter and a half an inning.
Yeah.
When he got to Triple A in his 13 2/3, he struck out 9 and walked 8. So
yeah, the walks are a concern.
He wasn't blowing the ball by people, and you know, he's having a little control issues. It's expected for a young guy.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, listen, let's move on. And I want to hit the audio clip of the week for you guys, since it is Phillies related. So let's go ahead and play it now, and we'll see what our comments are. Here you go.
How do you stay cool and how do you stay poised in a spot like this? The crowd is standing. To a man, they're standing. Here's the pitch.
Well, we're
Jim
not
Bunning,
quite 1964. The Father's Day, and it's not quite the right date, but it is Father's Day before we're back on the air. So I wanted to toss that out to you, Chet. Kyle, I guess you probably weren't around for that. But Chet, what's your thoughts?
Can you believe it's been 50 years already, first of all? Believe it or not, I don't remember that specific event happening because I was 6 1/2 at the time. So I was not quite into following baseball yet. That came 2 years later, in 66, I really started watching. So I certainly heard about the perfect game a couple of years later, and I heard about the Phillies' collapse later that season. But, yeah, that would have been exciting to watch, certainly, 1964. And you, that was right about the time you were starting to watch, Bill, so I'm sure you do have some memories about it.
I honestly really don't remember that specific game. But, you know, I read a lot of books on it, and as a kid, I probably was about 8 or 9 years old, and for Christmas I got some baseball books, and one of them was the Jim Bunning story. So I read that as a little kid, and, you know, those things have been ingrained in my head for a long time, and Tony Taylor made a diving play that saved that perfect game, and, you know, it was just a real cool event, and you know, it hadn't been done in over 100 years when Bunning did it. Obviously, it's been done some since then, but it was quite an event at the time.
Kyle, a little before your time, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Isn't he the Phillies' all-time right-handing leader in wins?
That would
Is
be
he
Robin
still?
Roberts.
I'm not sure. Is
I
he still,
that
Bill?
Would be Robin Roberts. Yeah, Robin Roberts.
Okay.
I'm getting them two mixed up. Yeah,
Roberts would be, yeah, definitely.
But okay. Well, we have a caller. Let's grab our caller right quick. Go ahead. You're
Hello.
On the Dr. Kiss's phone line. Go ahead.
Hi, Bill.
Hello. Yes.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Mark McClain. How you doing?
Hey,
Jim,
Mark. How are you?
Hey,
All
Mark.
Right, my friend. Hi,
Good to
Jim.
Hear from you.
Yeah, same here. Nice to talk to you and Kyle. Glad to have a chance to talk to you too.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Listen, I do remember that Jim Bunning game, and I was 14 years old and watched it on the black and white portable TV in my bedroom. And I remember when Johnny Stevenson struck out at the end, Jim was pounding that glove, and that was history made in Philadelphia from that point. I'm going to put a few things out, since this is a conglomeration of different topics tonight. Number one, the Phillies, Well, you know, you guys have said it before. I was off the computer for about 10 minutes, but I heard the beginning of the show. And that we don't have too much of a bright future ahead of us right now. But I lived through a 23-game losing streak and the 64 team that disappointed me at the end of the year, you know, with bunting and short, bunting and short.
Yep.
We had a golden time. I have four adult children that are in 30s, almost 40, and then my grandchildren. And we've had two different generations of Phillies. My adult children are really not used to seeing what has happened since 2008. They had one little bright spot in 93 that was kind of a, I said 93 was kind of an accident and actually gave Philadelphia baseball a bad indicator for the future when they made decisions that. It was kind of an aberration that that guys clicked all career years that year, but it gave them a false sense of security that they were going in the right direction as an organization, and that proved out to be the case. What's happened now is, I guess, loyalty, and I didn't get a chance to talk with you guys with Matt Goldberg last week. And, Bill, I know you've been a longtime fan. A season ticket holder. I mean, when you go through, I guess frustration is probably the word that's commonly used by a Philadelphia sports fan. I used to joke all the time about my Eagles that it was stress-free football. You know, they were expected to lose, okay? And when they won, it was a bonus, you know? And that's how it played out. I worked with in an area where there are more people aren't Eagles fans that support our teams, and I'm constantly arguing with them, and I keep saying that, and they bring up about how blue-collar we are. Well, you know, when you're going through years and decades of four teams that, and you see other teams across the nation having success, you keep wondering, well, here's the fifth largest metropolitan city in the nation, and we can't have that same thing. You kind of wonder why. So, you know, it's more or less a point I'm bringing up tonight for what Matt talked about last week, you know, what a Philadelphia, true Philadelphia sports fan is all about. And you have to be hardcore for it. Now, quickly, with the Eagles, and then I'm going to try to leave with one of my favorite stories for you guys. The Eagles, a lot of chatter talk has been around. I've heard it now. Basically, are we looking at 2014? If you were looking at the team right now, what's out there, including your rookies and stuff and OTAs, would you say they were a better team now in 2014 than they were in 2013? That's been the hot topic up here for the last week. And, you know, we haven't got to our training camps yet. We don't know, you know, God willing, we don't have any injuries, let's face it. I do going to give Chip a shout-out because his getting these guys in top physical shape has proven one very valuable lesson to the rest of the league, all right? And having guys in their 30s now really having to go at a fast pace and getting the right amount of hours of sleep and nutrition and everything else, I think that's a real positive thing that Chip has put into this program. I've said all along, I do not really feel that they're going to accomplish the same thing as they did last year, only because I do think their schedule is tougher. We talked about that a few weeks ago with Mark Eckel, and my feelings aren't changing about that. I do think this kid Matthews is going to be the real McCoy. I think he's kind of, in some ways, reminds me of what Brian Westbrook was as a running back years ago when the Eagles drafted him. And he may turn out to be the wide receiver in the same kind of category as Westbrook turned out to be. And that's a plus for us, all right? But I guess you can discuss, after I hang up, and throw it out to the rest of the callers for the Eagles talk side, do you really think right now, without making any more changes, that they are a better team in 2014 than they are in 2013, right?
I'm going to jump in, and I'm going to say that they are. I mean, yeah, the schedule is tougher, but I think the defense is going to be better. I think the guys are going to be more familiar with Chip's system in year two. And, you know, hopefully Nick Foles will be even better than he was last year. Maybe not numbers-wise, but just as a leader and a decision-maker. I like the Jordan Matthews pick that you mentioned, Mark. So I think they're going to be a really fun team to watch, and I think they're definitely the class of the NFC East, and they should at least win 10 games, maybe more, again, this coming season.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I like your positivism, okay? I don't know if I'll go to 10. I'm leaning more toward 9, and only because I don't like the NFC West. I think they've improved immensely. I think they're the toughest division in the NFC, to be honest with you. And, again, the only thing I really concern myself is health, okay? If we stay healthy and competitive, yes. Offensively, I'm not worried about it, okay? There's plenty of weapons that Chip can work with. Defense, I think another year of improving with draft and stuff like that, they concentrated. I really think Super Bowl 50 is in our reach, no question about it. I really do. And that's from a fan from 1957. And believe me, I've been waiting a long, long, long time, all right? Now, my favorite story for you, and Bill, I apologize if I talk to you about this on Facebook or not, but I was born in Huntington Valley next to Jimmy Fox, the Hall of Famer. And, in fact, Jimmy Fox's kids babysitted me as a kid. Well, my parents were friends with Robin Roberts, personally, and I met him when I was really young, all right? So, 1990s, Robin came up to the Burlington Mall in Burlington County at a card show. So I'm in my 40s, and I told my wife, you know, I got a picture of Robin and his wife and his child and his mother. They were at dinner at my parents' house, and it was a black-and-white photo of 1952. And brought it to the card show, and everybody's in line. They've got their baseballs and their bats and gloves and whatever, and I'm sitting there with this black-and-white photo. And I figure, well, I'm going to shake his hand and get his autograph now as an adult, you know, and see if he remembers my parents. Get to the end of the line, and it's finally my turn. I go up to Mr. Roberts, introduce myself, and ask him if he'd look at this picture and any chance he would remember my folks. Sure enough, he takes the picture, and the first thing he yells out, "Oh, my God, look at Robbie," referring to his son. And he's looking at it. He looks at me. He asks me my parents. Yeah, I remember them and all that. Very sociable. Well, lo and behold, who's sitting next to him was my other football hero, Chuck McNerick. And he was signing also right next to him. So Robbie gets the black-and-white photo, and he goes over to Chuck and says, "Chuck, look at this." And so Chuck's looking at the black-and-white photo, and he looks up at me, gives me a big wink, and he says, "Okay." And I says, "Well, this proves one thing, Robbie." And Robbie said to Chuck, "What's that?" I said, "You were as ugly then as you are now." And needless to say, that line was roaring, and one of the least expected things that I would ever think to come out of Chuck McNary's mouth, but that was Chuck. And I got a two-for-oneer. He autographed the picture for me, and Chuck shook my hand, autographed, and we became friends. And, that's a memory you just never, forever forget. You really don't.
Good story, Mark.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's a classic. It really is. It is. Well, gentlemen, I'm going to say thank you again for letting me have time with you, and I enjoy this show. This is good. It's more intimate than being on a regular radio show, and I hope to talk to you more on Facebook and keep the good work up. And, Bill, I don't know how fast you were flying from Lakeland, Florida, but I read that post, and it says, I didn't quite make it to Tampa in 18 hours, so, I mean, you dodged some bullets there, and I won't talk about that, all right?
All right. Well, I appreciate it, Mark. Thanks.
Yes.
All right, Mark.
Thanks. Take care, guys. Be good.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
All right. Well, let's jump around. Let's just stay on the Eagles, and then we'll jump back to the Flyers. But Mark kind of led into where I wanted to go anyway, so let's just keep on going there. You know, what I was going to ask you guys is now that the personnel situations are pretty well set, you know, for going into camp, it looks like, and other than maybe a few tweaks here and there, I wanted to ask you first about the defense. What are your thoughts on the defense with the personnel that we now have through free agency and the draft? You think we're better? Jen?
I think they're better, yeah. I mean, they got Malcolm Jenkins for the secondary. You know, they made a couple of draft picks defensively. I think Trent Cole's got another year left, and he's got a lot to prove. I think he came on pretty strong midseason last year and had a good second half as an outside linebacker. I like what they're doing, and yeah, I think they're definitely going to be better than they were last year. So I think the defense is going to be fun to watch. The key will be to not keep them on the field quite as much as last year. And, of course, the offense gets some of the blame for that since they work so fast. But I think the defense will definitely be better than it was last year.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me hit you with this one, Kyle, and then Chick can chime in. I got two questions kind of wrapped up in one, and Mark touched on this a little bit as well. But who do you see, with DeSean Jackson gone, who do you see having the most receptions on the club? And who will have the most receiving yards? Because they could obviously be two different guys. And do you see a 1,000-yard receiver in this bunch?
No, I don't. I think Riley Cooper will probably have the most touches, and then probably Macklin will probably have the most yards. Cooper's had a good relationship with Foles. They have a lot of chemistry. I can see that working out. And then, you know, obviously we all know what Macklin can do when healthy with his legs. And, you know, he's versatile. He has good speed when healthy. You know, he's a little bit older and some injuries now. But I see that panning out the way that is. So,
Bill, I'm going to jump in here because you didn't know this, but you stole one of my rapid-fire questions for Kyle. I was going to ask him who was going to lead the Eagles in receptions in 2014. Because I've been thinking about that a lot.
You can still hit him up. You can give him time to think about it now.
Yeah, okay. Because it could be anybody. I mean, you know, it could be any of the receivers. It could be Zach Ertz. Who knows? It could be Sproles coming out of the backfield because I think they're going to use him a lot as a receiver. So it's going to be interesting to see how they spread the ball around. That's going to be one of the fun things about watching this team. We're going to see more throws to the tight end. I think Zach Ertz really came on strong late in the year last year, so he'll be a second-year player now. Brent Celek isn't washed up yet, that's for sure. And I think they're going to use Jordan Matthews a lot as a slot receiver, so it's going to be fun to watch that offense, man.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Matthews does. I was just going to say that.
Well, I'm more excited about seeing the McCoy-Sproles combination and how those guys are used. Both are great weapons. Both can run the ball. Both can catch the ball. Both good players. I'm kind of interested to see how they're going to both get on the field together, get enough touches, and both be really, really good.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun to watch them.
Yeah, I hope Sproles has another couple of years left in the tank because Sproles, you know, when he's healthy and able, he's a good one. And he's also going to help the return game a lot, too. He may do kickoff and punt returns, who knows. But that's definitely going to help the Eagles special teams.
Right. Well, let's catch our breath right quick. We'll hit our sponsor, and then we'll come back, Chet, and it'll be rapid-fire time.
All right.
So
let's
take a minute to thank our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.ShopForKisses.org's website, you can become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. That's 484-319-8043. Okay, Chet. Kyle's chomping at the bit to do a little rapid fire. Now's the time, and then we'll get back to the Flyers.
All right. Rapid fire. All right, Kyle, you've heard this segment before, and now we're putting you in the hot seat, hoping that you'll answer these 10 or 11 questions in brief but honest fashion. And no, you can't phone a friend for help. So
All right. Here
we go, Kyle. What is the main reason, first of all, the Phillies are fighting the Cubs for the worst record in the National League?
Mismanagement of their club. The players are too old, overpaid contracts, and, you know, they're past their prime.
Which Philly has been the biggest disappointment this season?
That's a good question. Probably either Hamels or Howard. I'll go with Howard.
I'm going to say Dom Brown on that one.
Oh, that's a good one. You can go with him, too.
All right. Kyle, unless something somehow turns around for the Phillies, will they try to trade some of their veteran stars next month? We talked about this earlier. Who is most likely to go?
I'd say Cliff Lee, because of his talent. You know, he can give a lot to a team wanting to win a championship, and they're not going to need him anymore, you know. So I'd say Lee.
All right. Kyle, you write for TalkSportsPhilly.com. What sport is your favorite to write about?
Probably hockey. I love writing about all four, but obviously I probably like basketball. I mean, football and hockey the most, and I'll go with hockey.
All right. The Eagles are coming off a 10-6 season and a trip to the playoffs. How will Chip Kelly's guys do in his second season?
I'll say 10-6 again. I was thinking this earlier. They've improved, but the division's still pretty good, and their defense isn't still great. So I'll say they make the playoffs and win the division at 10-6.
All right. Name two of your all-time favorite sports movies.
That's a good one. Bull Durham and Space Jam.
Space Jam.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm gonna have to deduct points on that one, Kyle, because you had to say either Rocky or Hoosiers or Slapshot, but not Space Jam.
I love Rocky too. So.
Or Miracle.
Okay.
Or Miracle.
Yep. Speaking of Miracle, since they are perhaps hours away from winning a second cup with the Kings, do you maybe wish the Flyers had kept Carter, Richards, and Williams around?
Well, yes and no. They got a great deal in return, and the Kings won 2 years ago because of Quick, not really because of those guys. They aided the team, but I'm going to say no because they were bad in the locker room, and while I do miss them, I like Wayne Simmons, and I like some of the other players they got in return.
All right. Will the Flyers advance past the opening round next season?
Yes.
Okay. If you were the Sixers general manager, who would you target with the third overall pick later this month, and would you trade up to be sure you got that player?
Well, it depends on who goes ahead of them. I wouldn't trade up because any of the three great players that are supposed to go top three, you can't go wrong with either of them, Parker, Wiggins, or Embiid. So I'd say they probably were going to get Wiggins, and I wouldn't trade up. Probably Parker more so. So I'd say Parker, and they're not going to trade up.
All right. Which of Philly's four major pro sports teams will be the next to win a championship, and will it happen before Bill and I are dead and buried?
Well, that depends on your guys' health. No, I'm just kidding. I think a team will win before you guys, while you're still around, and the next to win it, that's a good one. I'm going to say the Flyers because they now have a good goaltender, and if they can get, you know, a good defenseman in the free agent market or from the minors and really mold him, I say they'll be the next. The Eagles don't have a good defense yet, even though they've improved. The Sixers, while they can be good in a couple years, they're still a bit of a way. And, you know, we'll see about the Phillies. I doubt they're going to win for a while, so I'll say Flyers.
And finally, Kyle, Lane Johnson and his offensive line mates went out for dinner a few nights ago at Del Frisco, and the bill was something like $17,700. How often do you and your friends go out and spend that kind of money?
Oh, every night. You know, we party like crazy. No, I wish I had that money to throw around. But when you're a professional athlete, you have the means to be able to do so. So good for them if you're able to. So never.
All right, Kyle Lutz, thank you. You have survived rapid fire.
Awesome. Thanks.
Good job.
All right,
good
Bill.
Job. All right. Well, let's hit the Flyers. Let's go that way. And, you know, you kind of touched on where I wanted to go with this, Chet, with your rapid-fire question. So let me bounce it to you since we kind of got Kyle's answer already. What are your thoughts on Mike Richards, Jeff Carter, and Justin Williams?
Oh, man. You know, I do kind of miss them now. Jeff Carter, I think, became better than most people thought. I think he went to Columbus first, didn't he, Carter?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, they traded him away, too. So it wasn't just the Flyers. But he has really blossomed. He's become a pretty productive guy for the Kings and certainly one of their leaders now. So I think that was the big surprise. You know, Richards, steady. Yeah, he never had that personality. He wasn't the great leader in the clubhouse, and I guess some guys didn't like him. But, hey, he and Carter and Justin Williams are going to win their second cup in 3 years, so you got to give them credit.
Yeah. I'm gonna kind of go the other way on that just a little bit. I think that Jeff Carter was one of the most underrated guys here. You know, if you look him up, he scored 181 goals for the Flyers in 6 years. One year scoring 46, he scored 33, he scored 36. He almost kind of had to me that Joe Cool Mike Schmidt effect, where people didn't think he was a grinder. But the guy could turn on the lamp. He could score goals. And, you know, as far as him and Richards thing in the clubhouse and what they did in their nightlife and all that, I kind of have a problem with that as well. And, you know, they're 25 years old or whatever they were at the time. They're multimillionaires. By God, they're going to go out and have some drinks and find friends. Isn't that what 25-year-old billionaires do?
Yeah.
So I kind of thought that was a kind of a bad deal for those guys. Now, as far as them being gone and who we got in return, I don't really have a problem with that whole thing because we did get some good players in return for them. But I just kind of think that they were given a bad deal on the way they went out.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was pretty controversial. And obviously, you know, Snyder wanted to get Brzgalov, so they were dumping cap. And then the whole, like you were saying, and I was saying earlier, you know, the whole party allegations. And, you know, the thing with Carter was he was a great player and a great scorer, but he couldn't really do much more. He was just a one-tool player. And now he's gotten a little bit better. He's doing a little bit more in L.A., but whereas Richards, he was like a five-tool player. And they kind of built him to that. If you look at his stats, like in like 2005, 2006, before he even became captain, he had like, you know, 30, 40 points a year, which is nothing. You know, he was playing on the checking line, and they really kind of brought him up to be the next Bobby Clark. They taught him, you know, put him on the penalty kill, taught him how to kill penalties, and had him on the power play so he could score. He was a great passer. I mean, he had that assist on the Williams game winner the other night, I believe, in game three, I think it was. And he was really good. And, you know, I think the good thing is they got a lot in return. Voracek's been great. Simmons has been a good scorer. Simmons has kind of been like a poor man's Carter, where he can score, but he can't. He can do some other things, but he's known mainly for his scoring, whereas Voracek can pass and he can do other things. So I really like what they got in return there. So it'll be interesting, but obviously, you know, there's over 20 guys that get their name on the cup each year, so there's bound to be former Flyers each year, and everybody talks about it. So I don't really have a problem with it. I'd rather be them than the Rangers. So let's put it that way.
Yeah, you know, Jeff Carter. One of the knocks on Carter was the fact that he was one dimensional. But that one dimension was he was a scorer. Frankly, I didn't even remember that he was that great a scorer. But yeah, if a guy's going to average 30 to 35 goals a season, I would take that as a one-dimensional player. The Flyers could use a little more pop like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Compared to Hartnell or, you know, Simmons.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, I want to hit you guys up on something else. I just need a one-word answer, and if we have some time, we'll go back and talk a little bit about it. Your answer is stay or go.
All right.
And we'll start with you, Chet. We'll go Chet, Kyle, right on through.
I'm going to stay. I'm going to stay, Bill. Oh, you got to give me a name first.
Scott Hartnell.
Go.
Kyle.
I'm sorry, who was the name?
Scott Hartnell.
Go.
Timo Tiemannin.
stay one more year?
Well, I think he's going to retire, but if he doesn't retire, stay.
Vinny LeCavalier.
Oh, man. That's a tough one. But I'm going to say stay.
Yeah, I agree. You know, he had a lot of the reason why he had a bad year last year was because he kept being switched around. He had no consistency. He wasn't in the same place because they kept moving him to wing because of Shen. Depends on if Braden Shen stays, but I'll say stay.
That was more than one word, Kyle.
That was more than one word. Braden Coburn.
Stay.
Stay.
Braden Shen.
Stay.
Stay.
Luke Shen.
Go.
Oh, that's an interesting one. Go.
Steve Downey.
Go.
Go.
Zach Rinaldo.
I know you like him, Bill, but I'm going to say go.
I'm going to say stay. I like his role in the team. I'm going to say stay.
Me too. Grossman.
Stay.
Stay.
Ray Emery.
Stay.
That one's interesting. I'll say he stays.
He stays. Okay, so the only ones you guys disagree on were Scott Hartnell and...
No, we both said go for Hartnell.
Yeah.
Zach Rinaldo, I think, was the only one.
Yeah.
Okay, you both said go. Okay. Zach Rinaldo. All right, that's pretty good. I'm a little surprised. I thought I wasn't thinking you would go with Vinny LeCavalier staying. Actually, I wasn't thinking you would both go with Braden Coburn staying. And I'm on board with you. As much as I have liked him in the past, I think Scott Hartnell is time for him to go.
Yeah. I think Hextall is going to talk with the chief and figure out how to better utilize Vinny LeCavalier this season. I think that's going to be one of their focuses to, you know, get him back on track, because I think he's still got some left in the tank. So I think they're going to do whatever they can to give him another shot.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree. Okay, let's hit our last segment. We're going to talk 76ers, and I've got a couple scenarios for you guys to think about. And you mentioned the draft a little bit earlier, but I want you to chew on this one. And Kyle, you'll be up. How about Kevin Love to the 76ers for the number 9 pick, maybe a couple second-rounders, and a couple players on the bench that aren't going to be here anyway? Five-player deal for Kevin Love, who is due to make – let me give you a little insight on Kevin Love. He's going to be 26 years old. He's 6'10", 260 pounds. He's played 6 years, averaged 19 points and 12 rebounds a game through his career, and actually has gotten better over the last few years. Some of those numbers are a little lower because of numbers he put up when he was real young. But he's a 19-12 guy. He's due to make $16 million in 2015. You in or you out on that deal?
It's the Sixers, number 10 pick, you mean?
We give
yeah,
up,
I think
no,
that's
10. I said 9. I'm sorry, the 10. Yes.
Go ahead, Kyle.
I'm on the fence there. For now, I wouldn't trade for him. I'd stay where I'm at and try and see if they can get a guy that could be a Kevin Love for even longer. So I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say yes. I like Kevin Love. And, you know, at number 10, you're getting a decent player, but it's still a gamble. Kevin Love has proven himself in the NBA. The guy is big, he's a power forward, and he can shoot. I'd make the deal.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I would absolutely make the deal. And the reason that I say that is, for the reasons you said, Chet, but, you know, they've got 32, 39, 47, 52, 54 picks.
Yeah,
so even
a lot
if
of picks.
You say, you gave away the 32nd and the 52nd, say, you know, the first and the fourth of those second round picks, and then you're still going to get three more draft picks. Plus, your top probably going to be Jabari Parker, the way it's looking from all the experts.
Yeah.
You still got a great draft. Now, The flip side of that is if you don't go, let's say that deal never happens and you're sitting there at 10. And here's what looks like the choices are that I'm seeing from all the experts. Doug McDermott, Gary Herrick, a guard out of Michigan State, James Young, a forward out of Kentucky, Dario Saric, the forward from Croatia. I've seen several mock drafts that show McDermott going to Charlotte on the pick before the 76ers. Will you trade up to get that guy? Or who's your other guy at 10 if you're not interested in a guy like Love?
But you know I'm a McDermott fan, so I would hope that he is still there at 10, and I would definitely take McDermott.
Yeah, I had him on my mock draft at number 10, too. So, and I actually changed my mind. I think I would go with Love. You know, if it was the number 3 pick, maybe not. But since you're going with the 10, I would say yes. And I think they'll probably stick with McDermott at number 10 if they don't trade the pick.
Hey, now, Bill, there's been some talks and reports about the 6.
Would you trade up to get McDermott at 8 or 9?
That depends how much Hinkie really wants to do it. If they're in love with him, yeah, I would. If you don't have to give up too much, maybe a couple of those second-round picks, why not? Bill, I wanted to ask you, though. There's some speculation about the Sixers maybe trading up to get the top overall pick from Cleveland, that they maybe really, really, really want to get Wiggins and don't want to miss out on him. Do you think that would be a good idea, or should they just wait and see what happens at number 3?
Well, I don't see, you know, I guess those guys are paid to know this stuff, but as the fan's eye, I don't see enough upside to Wiggins to trade up to get him ahead of Parker. You know, they would probably have to give up that 3 and then give up a number 2 or maybe 2 number 2s, I would say, to get that high. I don't see that big a difference myself.
Yeah, no. I agree. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. And all 3 players are so great. They're franchising, changing players. I don't think it makes a difference. I mean, you know, one player may be a little bit more ready, but that just means you got another year. And, hey, if another player is not ready and you lose another, you know, 50, 60 games, that just means you have another good pick next year. So, you know, I think it's a win-win situation. I don't think you need to trade up at all, like I was saying earlier. If it was just like one great player and then the rest of the first round was good but not as even, I'd say yes. But the fact that that's not the case, I think they should stay where they're at.
So what if Parker and Wiggins both went 1 and 2? Would you take Embiid even though you already have Nerlens Noel?
Yes.
Okay.
You go for talent over need.
Maybe. What do you think, Bill?
I think so, because even though there are some other good players here, it sounds like those 3 are thought to be the step above in whatever order they come out, the third or top 3 in every expert's opinion. So I would say stay with it.
Any concern about his back issue and the fact that would be the third straight year the Sixers would be getting a big man with injury problems?
Absolutely.
That would scare me.
You know, if it wasn't a franchise that seems to be snake bit, I wouldn't even let that enter the thought, but boy, it's sure been a run of bad luck.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, let's back up for a second, and we've only got a few minutes left, so I wanted to hit you up on, one, the Stanley Cup Finals. As you mentioned, the Kings are 3-0, hit 3 games to none. Is tonight the night for the Los Angeles Kings?
I think the Rangers salvage a game tonight, and then the Kings win it at home on Friday.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the home crowd will get them into it, and Dustin Brown, the captain of the Kings, he didn't really say anything bad. He just said, you know, he was just making some comments, and they'll probably have that on the, you know, material for the locker room or on the video board. So I think the Rangers win tonight. I'm going to say maybe 2-1 or 1-0, a close game, low scoring, and then I think the Kings will come back and win it at in game 5.
Well, I think I am going to go the other way again. They have no answers right now, Jonathan Quick. And as well as the Rangers have played throughout the entire playoffs. That's why they are where they are. They've been just outstanding and actually played pretty good the other night overall. They just didn't score any goals. I'm going to think that they're going to have trouble getting up for this one, and Jonathan Quick's going to be the man, and I'm going to go Kings in a sweep.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I think Quick gets Conn Smythe honors again for the second time in 3 years. Did you guys see that save he made the other day?
Yeah.
With his stick where he reached back? Oh, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And let's face facts, the Rangers are in this position because of the fact that not once but twice they blew 2-0 leads, you know, in games 1 and 2. You win one of those games and it's a different series, but you lose both of them in overtime. That's just a heartbreaker.
And even in the game the other night, I want to say the shots were like 32-17 or something like that in favor of the Rangers, but 3-0 on the scoreboard.
Quick's been great.
Yeah, and I don't see the they outshot them 2-1, and I don't see, you know, even though the Kings came back from 3-0 versus the Sharks, even though they're the comeback Kings, I don't see reverse, you know, fortune on them. I don't see the Rangers coming back from 3-0. You know, maybe I would say I wouldn't be surprised either way. If they win tonight, I don't think it goes any further than that. But I expect a well-fought game for both teams.
Me too. How about the NBA Finals? San Antonio has a 2-1 game over, 2-1 lead over the Heat. Who do you guys like in that?
Kyle, I'll go. You go first, Kyle.
I'm going to say Spurs. I picked the Spurs and Kings in my prediction on Facebook about a week ago before the finals started. And I think that the Spurs, they're just, you know, Popovich looks at the tape. He's smart. He did it the other day, and he had Kawhi Leonard. Had 29 points, had a great game. He was aggressive going to the basket. And, you know, he didn't even need Duncan to put up 30 or 40 or even 25, 30 points just because, you know, it was spread out. And they looked at the tape and not only that, but I think they just wanted revenge from last year, from losing to Miami in the finals. I said Spurs, and it could go 6 or 7. I'm not sure what the amount of games will be. It could, you know, but I definitely think I'm definitely going to say San Antonio wins the series.
I mentioned last week that I had been rooting for both the Kings and the Spurs. I also predicted that the Kings would beat the Rangers. As far as the NBA, though, I kind of thought the Heat would win, and now that it's 2-1 Spurs, I really don't know. I think it's going to be a 7-game series, and then anything can happen. I'm definitely still rooting for San Antonio, but, you know, you can't count out the Heat, 2-time champions, and LeBron playing well when he doesn't have cramps. So go Spurs, but I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely am rooting for them too, and I think it definitely could go 7. It'll be interesting. As long as San Antonio sticks to their game plan and as long as Miami keeps leaving that wide-open Bosch, this series could definitely plausibly go 7.
I'm going Heat in 7 because LeBron is the man. All right. Brings us close to the top of the hour. We've covered a ton of ground tonight, hitting all four sports and the championship series. We'd like to thank our special guest, Phillips, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Good job, right. Kyle.
Thanks.
Okay, we'd also like to thank Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, as well as our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chatchesco, this is Bill Furman, hoping you enjoyed the show. And we'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday night, June 18th at 7 p.m. to talk all things Philly sports. You can listen to our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.